Talk with Pat Caputo and the radio voice of the Detroit Tigers, Dan Dickerson.
This one is gone!
On Tigers Radio, 97.1, The Ticket.
248-539-9797 is the phone number. Pat Caputo along with Double D, Dan Dickerson, Tiger Talk here on 97.1 The Ticket. And Dan will be joined today by Tigers third baseman Nick Castellanos.
Yes, indeed. How you doing, Pat?
I'm doing well. It's good to be here. We got Tiger Fest this weekend. You're going out on
a big week.
I call it the Double Legs Tour. Going to go out there on that Tiger Caravan, which is great.
Thursday, Friday. So the West Michigan Whitecaps Banquet's always a lot of fun. I mean, they packed that place. You know, we talk about it a fair amount. That's a phenomenon over there, what they've done with the Whitecaps and the attendance at those games and the players who've come through there. And Alex Avila's getting inducted into their Hall of Fame. It was Don Kelly last year, among others. And it's a lot of fun. It really is. West side of the state, huge, obviously, Tiger territory. And
it is.
And then we have Tiger Fest on Saturday, the big two-hour show.
Well, it is. You know, the one thing that you get a dose of when you go on that tour and those different stops is that the Tigers aren't just a metro Detroit area team. And I think it's one thing that I really like from day one that Mike Ilitch has owned the team. He talked about, he's always sensed that tradition as it is a statewide team. You mentioned
it
Grand
is.
Rapids. You worked in Grand Rapids
8 years
earlier in your career,
so
you understand that. You know, Mickey Stanley's from there. They had that team, the Sullivans, that was there forever.
Great team.
And Bob Sullivan was part of the Tigers family, and he was a bit of a character and, you know, part of that. So, you know, all those things are big things in this state. And you go to Flint, they're like that. You go up into the upper parts and regions, Tiger baseball is great. You know, one of the great moments, I would share this with you because you were on the call that day. My father-in-law, you know, he passed a couple years ago. And his father was Lou DiNunzio, and he was a scout that signed Willie Horton and Bill Freehand. And, you know, a lot of Hal Newhouser. He was the bird dog scout that signed Hal Newhouser, and he coached him, you know, at that time, John McHale Sr. So he's, kind of a big name in Tigers lore. He signed Mike Ilitch, which is...
That's a pretty good list.
one of the things I sent over there, I don't know if Ilitch got it, but I gave it to Ron Coangelo. I said, here, you know, this was a no. I was going through the guy's papers. It was Jim Campbell congratulating him when Mike Ilitch bought the Red Wings and
one of his guys
did well. But anyway, make a long story short, we're driving down 75. We're coming back. We were in Frankenmuth. And it was 2011, and that was a great year for the Tigers. They had bounced back, and they had all these exciting comeback wins, if you remember. And I remember we're at Zender's, and they got this old TV that was there when I originally went to Zender's when I was a kid. The only time I went to a kid.
Not changed it.
It's the same TV. You know the one I'm talking about. It's in the lobby there. And the Tiger game is on. They're playing Cleveland. And the Tigers in Cleveland were in a pretty fierce pennant race. It was July or something. And we're coming back, and we're driving down 75, and we're caught in traffic. It's a holiday weekend. It's a Sunday. And that was a game that Austin Jackson threw the guy out at the plate.
To end the game.
And, you know, just listening to the broadcast, we're sitting on the edge of our seat, and we're just coming from this place where everybody was huddled around the TV, a little bit out of state. But people from all over the state congregate there, especially in the summertime for that whole – you know, Frankenmuth experience, and it just reminded me of what the state is like. Your call was so great. He got him at the plate or whatever you said, and it was a great time. So, you know, that's the way it is with the state, and you get a sense of that as you go
on. You do on the caravan. You really do. We don't go to Traverse City this year, but, I mean, you know, that's where people bring the radios in the summer, and I know because I hear from people who go, this is where we go on the weekends or for a week or two, and you hear from a lot of those people, even the people, obviously, who live up there as well, so... it is statewide, and that's why we, you know, the Tigers have built that radio network, and the station has built that radio network all throughout the state.
Oh yeah, you know, John Fetzer too is the former owner of the Tigers back in the day. He was a radio guy.
Yep.
He owned these radio stations. He bought those stations, and I remember one time we stopped at some institute where he was doing a lot of stuff in Kalamazoo when we were on that, and John Fetzer came out. It was after a couple years, like after he owned the team, and gosh, I remember being on the bus. It used to be a lot different there. We'd travel on one bus. And I'll never forget, you know, playing Hearts, like with Cecil Fielder and these guys. I'm thinking, man, if this thing were for money, I'd be way out of my league. You know, if I were throwing the Queen right now, I'd be in trouble. But anyway, Hearts is a great game on the bus.
So it absolutely is.
It's definitely a baseball game. So, but anyway, 248-539-9797 is the phone. A couple things. You know, we talked to Al Avila last week. the Tigers general manager. Dan, we talked about trades. And, you know, the obvious thing that came up, there are two names that have keep coming up. I keep hearing it in little sources or whatever I'm talking about. And I've been hearing Jose Iglesias' name a lot. I heard it from a couple different things and sources about Jose Iglesias is getting a lot of interest, or the Tigers are looking to move him. He's got a $4.1 million. I think it's 4-1, maybe 2 or something like that.
It was 4, though.
Over 4 that he won. He didn't win it. He signed before they went to arbitration. That's a pretty good-sized contract. He's under control for a couple more years, but just a couple more years. And he had a real good year defensively last year with his metrics and things. There's some interest in him. Would the Tigers be willing, because they might be able to get something for Jose Iglesias, willing to trade him and use Dixon Machado at shortstop? What are your thoughts on that?
I would love to hear what people think, because you and I were talking a little bit before. It's an interesting topic.
Yeah.
Because Iglesias looks like the prototypical terrific gold glove shortstop. He does not quite grade out at that level. He was improved last year, no question. Yeah. We've talked about some of his weaknesses that still persist, especially going to the hole. But, I mean, he's 26 this year, right?
Yeah.
And you kind of know what you have in Jose Iglesias. He's going to turn 27. He actually just turned 27. A solid player. Below average hitter, probably. Not great on the bases. I mean, obviously, you can live with Iglesias at short, obviously. But the Tigers, I don't think Alavila is talking about Dixon Machado projecting as an everyday player. And this is what they believe, is that he can hit enough to be an everyday player. I don't think they're talking about that just to try to pump up maybe his value because he's out of options. I really don't. I believe that's what the Tigers believe. I've seen him enough at short, I think, to think that he could hold down shortstop. Probably not a platoon with Andrew Romine, but Romine would probably get some playing time there. But he's a very good defensive shortstop. He's not a great hitter. I do like his walk rate in the minor leagues. That's not a small thing. Shows he's got a little command of the strike zone. So it's intriguing to me. Could you, as a Tiger fan, would you be okay with the idea of Dixon Machado at shortstop and trading Jose Iglesias, who becomes a fan favorite because he can make plays that nobody else can make?
Yeah, he's very flashy. And
he's fun to
exciting
watch.
To watch. And every once in a while he makes a play that makes you just, you know, roll your eyes and go, wow, I can't believe I saw that. Metrically, he doesn't grade out that well, but he did last year. At least I saw on the fan graphs, he was the seventh best position player in baseball defensively last year. Fan graphs had him that way.
Yeah, BIS didn't agree, Baseball Info Solutions, but, I mean, those are the two you look at, really. And I think Baseball Info Solutions a little better, just because I think they're a little more thorough, but
it depends on
your point. Right, your point is well taken.
So, you know, looking at it, I don't know. And then the other thing on Dixon Machado, and I try to keep up on Toledo, and, you know, you can, it's pretty easy. I obviously spend a lot of time that shows I need a life watching their games. But, you know, to be honest with you, I have to be true. Machado's been up. I don't have a feel for whether he's going to be a major league regular or remotely, or whether he's a 4A player.
I think defensively, I really don't have any doubts. I really don't.
Yeah. So
Unless the wear and tear of – but, he played every day at Toledo, and wear and tear didn't seem to wear him down. Lloyd McClendon has a good feel.
Right.
He watched him every day. That's certainly part of the equation. Lloyd's probably telling Al Avila, and the scouts have watched him, to feel defensively, absolutely. I think that is the consensus.
Now, the other thing, too, is tomorrow is the Hall of Fame announcement. It comes out, who's going to be in the Hall of Fame, don't. I have a vote in, and I'll tell you what my ballot is coming up next. Dan, I'd be interested to hear what you have.
Not easy. As you write the names down.
As you know, what your ballot is. And Bonds and Roger Clemens are gaining support. To tell you whether I voted for them or not. And, Dan, find out whether you would put them on your ballot as well. That'll be coming up next. We'd love to hear from you. If the Tigers traded Jose Iglesias and they went with Dixon Machado, would you be upset about that? Because Iglesias is a fan favorite. Also, your thoughts, should Barnes and Clements get into the Hall of Fame?
I would love to hear people's opinions on that, because you and I are going to talk about it, the reasons why we do or don't think so, and I'd love to hear what fans think, because I do think opinions are changing, especially now that Bud Selig is going in.
248-539-9797 is the phone number. Nick Castellanos, the Tigers' third baseman, will join us at 745. Now, the show's about you. Give us a call. We'll talk to you. We want to talk baseball. People love to talk baseball, especially at this time of the year. Makes them think of spring training. Hey, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Pat Caputo, Dan Dickerson, Tiger Talk, and 97.1 The Ticket. 97.1 The Ticket.
Back down. you don't back down. 97.1, The Ticket. Tiger Talk with Pat Caputo and Dan Dickerson on Tigers Radio. 97.1, The Ticket.
Swinging a little pop-up here into shallow center. Iglesias going out. The over-the-head basket catch. the ball that nobody else is going to get.
Right, that was all his.
Off-speed pitch had Eibner fully extended. A soft little pop-up to Iglesias ends the top of the second.
Jose Iglesias challenges how you call a game sometimes. Yeah. It wasn't an over-the-shoulder catch. I said over the head. That doesn't really sound right to me either. But Springer was running with his back to home plate and somehow picks the ball up over his head and makes a catch. It looks like it's blind every time. He says he's got a strategy to it. He described it to me one day, but I still don't know how he does it.
Well, special. I mean, those plays, you can think of like four or five times at least, you know, where that just that type of play that you described happened. So, and he's flashy. You know, a lot of times they turn to double plays. You know, he does some things that make your jaw drop defensively. He snapped the ball, but a little less of that this past year
and
more
solid.
They made
a point of emphasis on being a little less flashy, a little more reliable, and he was.
Yeah. So, you know, and teams are interested in him, I hear. And it's possible that he may be moved. Would you be upset about that? Because he is definitely a fan favorite. I know not last year. I didn't criticize his play last year because I thought he was a lot better. Rarely did I find anything, you know, to say like I had said in the past. But a few times before last year, I'd said, hey, look, this guy's all flash. There's not a lot of substance here. And a lot of fans got very angry at me and said, hey, you know,
does that happen often?
Yes, once in a while when you're in this business, when you're an opinionist. So, but, you know, how do you feel about it? I know he's a fan favorite. How do people feel about it? And I freely admit, Dan, I have no feel for whether Dixon Machado. Sometimes you look at guys and you do have an opinion about it. Sometimes you're right or wrong. It doesn't mean, you know. But with Dixon Machado, I don't.
And we haven't, and you've watched him in the minor leagues. I have not. We've only seen him for really, in the end, a handful of games at the major league level. I've just been impressed with what I've seen and go by what the Tigers feel in terms of his defense.
And in watching those games, I didn't get a feel for it. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't.
The other thing that Al mentioned last week was Anthony Gose. He's still around for all the troubles he had last year because they feel he's a really good defensive center fielder. We didn't have time to really kind of follow up on that. That was one of the last things he talked about. But by the numbers, Anthony Gose does not, as you know, grade out very well in center field. No. Either the year he played a lot or a little bit last year, he does not grade out above average. They try to position him a little bit deeper. He was better on deep balls last year. But overall, he doesn't make the kind of play. It's one of those puzzles to me. Because I like the defensive numbers. You have to look at something when you're looking at guys from other teams especially. Anthony Gose does look good in center field. He's got quickness. I think he's got a quick first step, but he did get beat on a lot of balls deep the year he played a lot of center field. And, again, last year he didn't play a whole lot. He looks like a guy who could be a good center fielder, but he does not grade out well there. So that, to me, is one of a bit of a puzzle. Deeper positioning does help. His arm was strong but erratic. And you wonder if he's around just to provide a little bit of competition for Collins and Jacoby Jones, because I can't picture a scenario, and perhaps to increase his trade value, he's out of options. Or does he have a legitimate shot? I don't picture him having a legitimate shot to be the starting center fielder.
Well, when they first traded for him, I couldn't believe that they got him for Travis. Not that I thought Travis was a bad prospect. He's actually done some good things in the major leagues, quite a few, a lot more than Anthony Gose.
You thought advantage Tigers in that trade.
Well, I thought Anthony Gose, he was rated as one of the top 40 prospects. Everything about him as a player, I like his speed, the way he sets up at the plate. He looks like he's got potential as a hitter. I like everything about him except for the way he plays and the small doses that I've gotten from Anthony Gose.
I like everything about him except for the way he plays.
And the person, you know, and the way he's conducted himself, it tells me that it's a mind game, that the things that separate major league players.
I think you've absolutely nailed it right there.
Because he should be a good player by all the tools and the measurables and things like that. And he just doesn't play well. And if, you know, you look at Travis and the way he approaches the game and the way he performs at the moment and Gose, you know, the comments the Gose made. Even on the media tour last year, there were a couple things he said that just kind of raised some eyebrows. And then really when they talked about defensive metrics, he kind of went off on that and different things.
It was a hoax.
And then just a couple times, like after games when I've been in the media scrum around him, you can see where he's missing something. And I don't know Travis from Boo that way, other than to know he's one of these guys who's, you know, look, is going to get the most out of every moment. We're going to talk to a guy today who constantly grinds in Castellanos. You don't hear a lot of excuses from players like that. And, you know, they eventually end up making it. It's a tough game. You know, it's a game of failure, and you immediately got to get off the, you know, the bike and right back on it the next day. There's advantages and disadvantages to that. I think with Anthony Ghost, it's the mind part of that, you know, and doing that.
I think
that.
You hit on something because, I mean, Wally Joyner believed in Anthony Ghost when he was struggling. And he struggled at the plate. Wally Joyner always believed, and Wally was very honest. When you got, you know, you could just say off the record, you tell me what you think. He really thought that upside was there. You saw the potential. I mean, the skills
so did everybody.
Are there.
I mean,
and he always pointed to it's you have to believe yourself that you're that good.
Right.
And he wasn't ever sure that Anthony did.
And you got to, you know, I don't know how to describe it, but, you know, Jim describes it, and it's a very simplistic way about Ian Kinsler. You know, when you guys are doing the broadcast, and I think people might hear it and say, oh, that's a trite thing. They'll just go, you know, Ian Kinsler's a ball player. You know, every once in a while you hear that term, and it's just a total cliche. But Ian Kinsler, you know exactly what that means. And with Anthony Ghost, that other part, you kind of get the message. And, you know, that light bulb needs to go off there. 248-539-9797 is the phone number. George, you're on 97.1 The Ticket. Tiger Talk, what's up, buddy?
Hey, good. It's great to talk baseball. In January, 40 degrees in the rain. This
always.
Could be April or it could be late September.
It could be a November World Series night.
Yeah. So that being said, I can't really comment on Iglesias because I just view him as, you know, very strong infielder, defensive, weak hitter. You know, I grew up with Eddie Brinkman. So, you know, it's sort of, you know, I mean, how do you say that? That's how I look at it. And I don't know enough about Dixon Machado to make an educated guess on replacing Iglesias, so I'd say keep him. But I want to get into the Bonds, Clemens Hall thing.
Sure,
please do.
First of all, I've always said steroids baseball was some of the most exciting baseball I witnessed in my life, if you want a real answer.
No.
Have me tell the truth. However, you know, I've always said steroids don't help you make contact with the baseball. And they don't help you put movement on a baseball or place your pitch. But that being said, and these two gentlemen are two of the best at what they did. That being said, though, if you put them into the Hall of Fame, then my thought is, aren't you then condoning what they did, who are two of the most egregious offenders? And then it's, I guess, up to baseball to decide, do you ban this stuff or not? Because they're getting in because they were good. However, they cheated about as hardcore as you could using these substances. And I'm curious your thoughts on that because you're sort of darned if you do, darned if you don't.
Well, I voted for him this year for the first time.
So what made you change your mind?
Because I know for a tremendous degree of certainty, not just hearsay, that there are players that are in the Hall of Fame now who did do steroids. So why would you keep these guys out because they were, you know, so-called caught or suspected when somebody else who did it just as much as they did and maybe even more gets into the Hall of Fame? So, but I can't tell you who and why and all. That's why they called the book Game of Shadows, because you end up getting sued and somebody who told you this will deny they told you this and that and all those things. So, but,
baseball evaluate what's banned and not banned?
Well,
I mean, seriously on this.
I mean, in that particular era, there are several players that are going to be in the Hall of Fame the next few years. They can't avoid it, who are going to be actually use PEDs and weren't detected with it. It was in, or weren't named in the Mitchell Report or in the Jose Canseco book and all that stuff. And yet everybody knows that they did it. So it's one of those type of things. So, you know, after a certain point when you start to see guys get in anyway, to me, it's time to vote on the merit. Other things like Bud Selig, you know, gets in and, you know, he benefited from the steroids era a great deal because it helped the labor piece in the game after they had stoppages. There's all kinds of different reasons in doing it, but I always felt uncomfortable, George, myself, not voting for the best hitter I've ever seen in Barry Bonds and the best pitcher I've ever seen in Roger Clemens.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with your approach. I mean, I think they should be in. I think Pete Rose should be in. You know, it is what it is. I still think they were great players.
I would vote for Pete Rose if he were available, even though he, you know, the knucklehead factor is like off the charts with Pete Rose.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying they're the brightest bulbs out there, and they put things in their bodies that may still do incredible harm to them. But that was their decision. You know? Yeah.
But you know, that's how I feel. I don't feel like it's a good guy award. Although there is a moral clause in there for a reason that you can apply to it. But you know, it's not a speech.
But
at it
the seems to only
club.
Be being applied now to those who are suspected of using PEDs, and was not really applied to some of the
guys
back in the day who used greenies, which were openly distributed or at least openly available in clubhouses.
Yeah,
amphetamines,
yeah.
And you can say that's not a performance enhancer. Well, it helped your performance,
absolutely,
didn't it?
Absolutely.
Absolutely did. So there is that moral character clause, whatever you want to call it, but it seems to be selectively applied.
Well, if you got, like, after the rules are applied, Manny Ramirez gets, you know, he gets banged for that. You know,
right.
Come on. And Rafael Palmeiro, okay, that's a little bit different circumstance. But
yeah, I came to this realization last year. You guys, meaning baseball writers who vote for this, were in an unfair position to me of being judge and jury on the PED issue. Guys were clearly being kept out, like Bonds and Clemens, because they had knowingly used PEDs. And then you're in the position of, what about this guy? Well, I heard he used, and I heard maybe from this guy. And then all of a sudden, you guys have to turn. That's why it seemed last year, it really just hit me that, and I don't like it, but to me, it was the only logical thing to do. You vote for the guy based on what he did in his career. And Clemens are simply two of the best ever.
Coming up next, Dan, I'm interested to hear you put in the Hall of Fame with this. I'll tell you who I voted for. That'll be coming up next. Nick Castellanos, Tigers third baseman, will join us at 7:45. Appreciate that phone call. Appreciate you listening tonight. It's Tiger talking. 97.1 The Ticket. Ah, that's Double D, Dan Dickerson, 248-539-9797. Okay, Dan, you got the Hall of Fame ballot. Who would you have voted for this year?
So you're only allowed to put 10 names on.
That's right.
You know, as much as I've been reading, I hadn't really looked at the full list and realized how tough a choice this was.
Yeah, it was a pretty loaded class.
It really was loaded. And now that Bonds and Clemens, who were not being considered really, they didn't get any support 2 years ago, and now it's starting to build. And again, my feeling is vote based on the numbers. Educate yourself as a student of the game as to what was going on at that time. But again, because of the reasons we talked about, Bonds and Clemens are in, then Messina's in, Schilling, Bagwell, and then Tim Raines has to be in.
Right.
Edgar Martinez, I've got him in.
Okay.
Pudge Rodriguez, yes. But I mean, was he the best DH? Yeah, DH is a position, right? Yes. Pudge Rodriguez is in. And then I've got Trevor Hoffman, number 10, because, you know, I think relievers have a very tough time. If it's only the Mariano Riveras of the world are going to get in the Hall of Fame, there's only going to be one reliever in the Hall of Fame from here on out. Trevor Hoffman had 600 saves. Whatever you think of the save statistic, he did his job remarkably well for a long, long time.
Well, Trevor Hoffman, I didn't vote for him this year, but that might be the one guy that I, in the future, that I'd left off my ballot that I'd still consider in the future. I had 9 players on my ballot this year.
Oh, and by the way, just real quick, so people understand how tough this is. Again, I didn't have a vote. Broadcasters don't get to vote. I'm leaving off Sheffield, Vladimir Guerrero, Manny Ramirez, Sammy Sosa, just to give you an idea of some of the people leaving off if I voted for those 10.
No, that's, you know, it's a Sosa, there's a lot of, you know, he had 600 and some home runs. There's a lot of question about his steroid use. There's actually no actual proof of that. But his other numbers weren't as impressive or his career as long as what he would be. Just when you hit 60 home runs in 4 years, it makes your home run total go up a lot more than what, you know, what you might think. But he wasn't metrically that good. This is my list, 9 players I had this year. Kurt Schilling. Tim Raines, I absolutely believe he belongs in. It's his last year on the ballot. Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Bagwell, Mussina, Pudge, Larry Walker.
Mm-hmm. Did I mention Walker? Because I did have a check mark next to his name.
Larry Walker, you know, is an underrated player. And he wasn't just a product of Coors Field. Looking at the numbers, he did pretty well away.
And I was always convinced that he was. But, no, strong numbers on the road that compared to, well, say, Ken Griffey Jr.
Right. And Jeff Kent. I put him on the list. I thought he, for a middle infielder, that would be the one guy that probably, him and Walker probably. Pudge, I definitely think, belongs on. Mussina, I think Mussina and Schilling absolutely belong in, but there's a lot of prejudice toward starting pitchers of this era because they look at these guys from the 60s, which was a completely different era, and they don't project guys like Schilling and Mussina into how starters are used in modern era.
So they hold low win totals, quote-unquote, against them.
And higher ERAs,
right.
And they pitch in different eras than guys who pitch in the 60s. It was used against Morris, but Morris didn't have real good wins above replacement. These guys have outstanding metrics, particularly Curt Schilling. He was one of the top, I believe, 26 pitchers in the history of the game in terms of wins above replacement. So that's my list. What do you guys think? 248-539-9797 is the number. Hey, Matt, you're on 97.1 The Ticket Tiger Talk. What's up, buddy?
Yes, guys. My feeling about the Hall of Fame is I look at two players that I'm going to pick out. One was in 1989 when Rafael Palmeiro was involved in a 7 or 8 player deal with the Rangers from the Cubs. And I said, I heard of this guy. You know, I said, he's a good punch and Judy hitter. You know, he's going to hit you 290 and maybe 8 home runs, which he did his first few years, you know, 8 to 14
home
runs.
Until he was age 30.
And he ends up with 564 or 3 home runs and 1,800 RBIs. Come on. And Mark McGuire, Sammy Sosa, I saw him as being a 25-home-run person when George Bush was the managing partner of the Texas Rangers.
Right.
He has 66. I think he had more home runs in a three-year period than anybody in the history of baseball.
Yeah.
66 home runs in one season. 608 or whatever it was for his career. Come on. And I'd like to ask you one question, Pat. When was it that you decided that Barry Bonds was the greatest hitter that you ever seen? At what point in his career?
You know, it was when he was with the Giants, you know, and he was going through, you know, after his head grew and, you know, literally, and started to do that. But his, you know, his patience, so there is a point there. But he was a great hitter before that, 5-3
right.
player. So, but I understand your point on it, but. And same with Clemens. I don't know when he started and when he didn't. It was kind of odd how he started to throw harder when he was older. I thought that was somewhat odd at the time. And, you know, and I was naive about it for a period of time that it didn't affect pitchers as much as it affected hitters. So I started talking to some pitching coaches who told me, hey, man, you know, it does help the pitchers a lot. They do start to throw harder when they start juicing like that. So, you know, it's just a lot to it when it comes down to it. But you're right. I mean, it was during that period when he had a on base percentage over 600, you know, yearly where it was like that, to the point where I took my nephew out and took him on a road trip because he never played against the Tigers here in Detroit and took him on the road so he could watch him play out in Arizona that he was such a great hitter. But, you know, again, it's, you know, to me, it's not a good guy award. You know, Barry Bonds is a complete and total jerk. He truly is. Clemens is too. But I vote, you know, I mean, it's not a good guy word. Curt Schilling's, horrible. I'd use a terrible word,
but
I'm on radio.
With me and Barry Bonds is that I think Barry Bonds would have been a Hall of Fame player even before that, what he was doing with Pittsburgh.
Well, probably would have
kept on that track.
Absolutely. Same with Clemens. I mean, you know, it's just they went from, you know, a certain point to another point. But, you know, to me, it was always, I felt kind of odd leaving them off the ballot, knowing that there were others that in the game that was so prevalent in the game. I mean, I can name you player after player after player that everybody knew was doing it, including many who played here in Detroit. And but, you know, it's one of those things where you talk to people and they don't know because they didn't live through that era or they didn't cover the game in that era. So they say things like, oh, there's no definitive proof.
And that's why they
have no idea what they're talking about, how ignorant they are on it.
And that's why it makes sense to just say, okay, let's just vote based on the merits of their numbers and their production or lack thereof.
That's right.
Because otherwise you're going to just get bogged down in who did, who didn't. I heard, he heard.
That's right.
She heard. And then you're becoming judge and jury based on innuendo. Sometimes, let's face it, secondhand information. I know you have your sources, Pat, but I'm just saying this is what it puts the position of voters. It puts them in an awkward position. Now you're just voting on the merits of their production or lack of.
But it was far more prevalent than you know. And it's something, you know, and there are players who've been hurt, you know, caught now. But think about the denials by, say, example, Ryan Braun. You know, I mean, oh, I didn't do it. I'm going to sue this guy. I'm going to do this and that. And he was, you know, it turned out he got busted and was the biggest fraud of all time.
Yep.
All those players were like that at that time. And there were many, many players, hundreds of players. All right. You don't understand that we're doing it. And it took grand jury testimony leaked to a couple reporters from the San Francisco Chronicle to actually blow the lid off of this, and the death of Ken Caminiti. Those are the only things that came out. It was like this secret underground thing that you have no idea what you don't know when you talk about it. And the people who were around it, you know, on a daily basis, such as myself, starting in the late 80s, you know, understand exactly what was going on. Yet they called it a game of shadows because you really can't point to it and do so without, you know, being subjected to lawsuits. Jose Canseco sued Thomas Boswell. So you got to understand the way that is. So, but in voting, it's put us in an awkward spot, those who know. But once I saw that there were a couple players that went in that I definitively knew were in, you know, roids users, I said, hey, you know, it's time to, you know, Bonds and Clements are, yeah, these guys used it just as much as they did. 248-539-9797 is the phone number. Hold that, though. Nick Castellanos will join us coming up next at Tigers third baseman. Tiger Talk at 97.1 The Ticket.
97.1 The Ticket. Tiger Talk with Pat Caputo and Dan Dickerson on Tigers Radio. 97.1 The Ticket.
There's a fly ball to center off the bat of Castellanos. This one's deep, going back. Nick, when he's looking up, and that ball is gone. A home run!
Whoa.
Nick Castellanos with a three-run blast to straightaway center, and the Tigers lead it 8-2.
Joining us now on Tiger Talk is third baseman Nick Castellanos. How you doing, Nick?
Very good. How are you guys?
Good. Good to hear you. Good to hear your voice and get ready for another season.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, Nick, last year, you know, it was both a good news, bad news tale for you. You had a pretty good year, and then the injury came and kind of derailed things. How frustrating was it for you during that pennant race to be out? It was the first significant injury you've had of your career, and how do you feel about bouncing back from that?
I mean, it definitely sucked, no doubt about it. But, I mean, you know, it was my first career, injury in my career, and I just try to use it as a learning experience, you know, and just keep working, try to stay, you know, focused. So when I was 100%, you know, and my hand was back to where I could play, like, I was able to contribute. So, you know, I try to learn, like, use it as a learning experience, but it definitely hurt not being out there on the field.
You look back at that season, Nick. I mean, it was a season full of major improvements, both in the field and at the plate. I mean, how do you assess your year? But, I mean, it was batting averages up, the power numbers were rock solid and improved. How do you look at that season, and what kinds of things do you want to still get better at? I know players are always looking to get better, but what are some of the things you look at for 2017?
Well, I mean, just to improve in every aspect of the game, really. You know, last year was definitely my best year, but it's a process. You know, everything is a process, and it's a learning curve, you know, each and every year, and I think I'm just becoming more comfortable and figuring out, you know, myself more as a baseball player. You know, my rookie season was tough, you know, trying to learn to play third base on the fly, you know, when I took, you know, 2 years, not just under 2 years off. So now I feel like, you know, I'm comfortable. I'm with the speed of the game and whatnot. And I think it shows, you know.
I know one of the guys who's helped you at third base and is never going to let you not try to get better, but I know you're driven as well. But Matt Martin certainly has been a big part of your career defensively. I know you've gone to work with him down in Texas in the off season. Did you go down and work with Matt this off season?
I'm going to after FanFest.
Right after FanFest. Just describe some of the things he does for you, Nick.
Matt is one of the most unique, one of the best people I've ever met in my life, and he has so much passion for baseball, and he's the definition of a guy who doesn't do this for a paycheck. And he just wants to help all of the people who want to get better. And, you know, he works on everything. He works on, you know, the way I go about playing the position, to defensive work, to making sure that, you know, I don't tense up the closer I get to a hitter playing infield in. You know, he's very good at what he does.
You know, Nick, we're talking Nick Castellanos, Tigers third baseman here on Tiger Talk at 97.1 The Ticket. Looking at your team this year, you got pretty much everybody coming back. They kept the team together. There was a lot of talk about there was going to be changes in the offseason, and it doesn't look like there's going to be many as spring training approaches. How confident are you that you guys can compete and maybe even overtake the Indians this year?
Well, I think that if I stayed in the lineup, you know, and I don't get hurt, I think we would have had a very good chance of being in the playoffs. You know, I don't know if we would have been better than the Indians, but I think it's a shame that we never had me and Upton and my bat in the lineup at the same time, especially when Upton was hot towards the end.
Right.
That could have been a lot of fun to watch, and it wasn't a good timing, you know. And imagine if we had JD's bat, my bat, and Upton's bat, and we're all going at the same time, and none of us get hurt, you know. So that's all of a sudden you have a lot of danger, you know, through your seven hole hitter.
Yeah, and you know, you add in Miggy and Kinsler, and you got V-Mart still. It's a pretty potent lineup. Once you guys score a lot of runs. Looking at this coming season, how do you project it out, and how do you approach the Indians? I mean, I know it had the stick in everybody's craw that the Cleveland Indians beat you guys as much head-to-head. Are you hoping to turn the tables on them this year?
I mean, baseball is just one of those things. It's just a crazy stat, you know. We're not going into spring training like we got to beat the Indians. We still feel that all we got to do is beat the Detroit Tigers, and we're going to be right where we want to be. We had major injuries on pitching and defense, you know, pitching and hitting last year, and it came down to the last game, and we still almost squeaked that thing out.
Nick, we know.
So, go ahead.
I was going to say, we know about, obviously, Zimmerman and Verlander. We certainly learned about Michael Fulmer, but this is a team that's in a rare position to have three, perhaps, young pitchers all in the rotation in Norris, Fulmer, and Boyd. Can you just describe for Tiger fans what impressed you about those three? I know there were some injuries involved with Norris, but those three especially, what they mean to the rotation?
That's how it starts. You know, how are you ever going to get three, you know, veteran studs? They usually start out as young rookie studs, and that's what we have. We have a really good young pitching staff that has the opportunity to work together and grow together. And, you know, chemistry is huge. So I think if you get three young pitchers that are all very good friends together, like they are very good friends, and they help each other out, and everybody's on the same page, especially with a veteran, you know, as Justin is, and you can make some special things happen in the future.
Well, when you sit back and you look at last year and then this year, you guys made a lot of improvement from the year before. So if you just get a few more wins, you get over that 90 win total, maybe you'll get into the playoffs. But Nick, good luck to you in the coming season. We appreciate you taking the time and talking to us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Thanks, Nick.
There you go. That's Tigers third baseman Nick Castellanos. You know, the one thing I was always impressed with him as a player, Dan, we were talking about in break, he's a guy that keeps coming at you. I mean, the downs of the game, he gets knocked down, he keeps getting up, and you've seen that year-to-year improvement from him.
Yeah, and what he did at the plate last year, major improvement. A lot of hard work goes into it. Remember, he's still shy of his 25th birthday.
Yeah, I'll see you Saturday down at Tiger Fest. I'm doing the show down there. I think I start the show at 10, but you join the show at 11 with all these Tiger guests.
Three editions of Inside Tiger Town or Tiger Talk in 7 days.
It's unbelievable. but that'll be 11 o'clock, Al Avila, and many of the players.
Yeah,
Justin Verlander,
James McCann. We've also got, we'll hear the aforementioned Matt Martin, along with Nick Castellanos. So, yeah, it's going to be a good lineup.
Yeah, I think they call it the Tiger Club. That's where we'll be located down there if you're at the Tiger Fest. For that, and you can hear it, of course, here on 97.1 The Ticket. Dan, enjoyed it. We'll talk to you next week.
Right.
I'm coming up next with the legendary Dennis Fithian here on 97.1 The Ticket.